So we get up to Daf Zayin Amid Beis, and we get up to Dorish Bar Kapora, which is towards the bottom of the Daf. And we were speaking about a concept called Mesinus. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that concept. The Mishnah in Avos says, "Have a Mesunim Badin," which means that a person should be very careful about judgment. He shouldn't be rash, he shouldn't be impetuous, he should be very painstaking and consider all the possibilities, investigate the case from different perspectives before he rules on the case. So that's going to be the subject of Dorish Bar Kapor, and that's on Daf Zayin Amud Beis. We also have a statement of Reish Lakish earlier on the Daf, and Rav Ashi builds on Reish Lakish. And you may recall that there was an equation between din, between judgment, and the Beis HaMikdash, and the Shechina that's shown in the Beis HaMikdash, specifically the Mizbeach. So for example, the Gemara emphasizes that Liosid Lavo, if the judges are not the proper judges, and if they pervert justice, then that's going to be as severe of a punishment as Churban Beis HaMikdash. It's a destruction of the Shechina. And Reish Lakish is going to make a statement here. You'll find it here on Daf Zayin Amud Beis. Kol Hamamid Dayan Sheino Hagun. If they appoint a judge who's not worthy to judge, Ki Ilu Notel Ashera Notea Ashera B'Yisrael. It's as if he planted Avodah Zarah. What's the connection between Avodah Zarah and false judgment and perverting the truth, the justice? Shenemar, because in the parasha of Shoftim, where the Torah commands the appointment of Shoftim, of judges, immediately following the pasuk of Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha, it says lo sita lecha shera kol eitz. You're enjoined from planting any sort of a tree that's designated for the worship of idolatry. So there's a comparison here between the minui shoftim, between appointing judges and idol worship. Because again, as we've said over and over again, the concept of judgment is really together with God. God is there, He participates, His presence is there, Elokim Nitzav Badaskel, and anyone who perverts justice is basically worshipping Avodah Zarah. It's like denying God. Rav Ashi says the flip side is true, that where there is truth, and where there is Chachma, the wisdom of Torah, which is truth, then you're really putting yourself in the close proximity of the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is the symbol of the Beis HaMikdash. It's the central hub of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, b'makom sheyesh talmidei chachamim, where there is shoftim v'shotrim, is ki'ilu nita'o eitzel mizbeach. It's as if the talmidei chachamim are planted next to the mizbeach. Shenemar, the Torah says in the same pasuk we just quoted, lo sita l'cha asher kol eitz, eitzel mizbeach Hashem Elokecha, next to the mizbeach of Hashem. So, Torah and truth is eitz al mizbeach, and perversion of truth, which is falsehood and judgment, that's going to be an asherah, which is planted next to the mizbeach. Ksiv lo sasun iti Elohei kesef Elohei zahav. The Torah in the Aseret Hadibur says you shall not create idols out of silver and gold. So the Gemara asks, you may remember this Gemara, Elohei kesef Elohei zahav, hu delo avid. Is the Torah just enjoining us from creating idols out of silver and gold? Had the eighth shari, can you create fashion idols out of wood? Omar Avashi, Eloha haba b'shvil kesef, Eloha haba b'shvil zahav. That this pasuk is referring to Dayanim who buy their way in and they secure positions as higher judges based on the money, the gold or the silver that they pay. And that's this terrible violation here of Losasun Iti. And Iti means with me, because again, God is with the with the judges in judgment. Then we had the Gemara about Rav. Rav Kiosle Beidina, when Rav came to the Bezdin, Omar Hochi, he declared to himself, Birus Nafshi Liktola Nafik. On my own will, with my own will, I am placing myself into a situation of death. In other words, the severe punishment for violating and perverting justice is death. Utsvi Basi Lesu of it. I'm not doing anything for my family. Right? Tzvi means the needs, Basi of my household, Lesu di of it. I'm not doing anything because I'm not going to get paid for this. Reikon Lebesi Ayel. I'm going to go back home with nothing in my pocket because I'm not going to be paid for this. Ulavai Shete Bia Ki Yitzia. He says, my only hope and prayer to God is that I should come back. The same way I went, I should come back alive. It's like a soldier who goes out to battle. He prays to God that he should be able to return home alive in one piece. So too Rav, out of his humility, even though he knew that he was he had full intention to uphold the laws of the Torah and justice, but nevertheless he was afraid that maybe he'll make a mistake. Now yesterday we had a long discussion, for those of you who might remember, about why Rav is afraid of a mistake. The Gemara is going to establish a principle which is called Ein L'dayan Elamashein of Rogs, which means, as Rashi interprets it, that a dayan just has to have the right intention, and if he does so, even if he makes an error, he will not be faulted for that error, he will not be punished. So why is Rav so nervous here? After all, his intentions and his kavanah are certainly for the sake of Shamayim. And we discussed Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu also seems to be afraid that he might be punished as a judge because he might, chas v'sholem, pervert justice. And why should Moshe be afraid? After all, ein l'dayan ela ma she'enov roos. And the answer that we gave was twofold answer. One, in the name of the Machzor Vitri, that there's a certain moment up in Shamayim which is called the Shas Kas or Zam, and that's a very precarious moment. And the second answer was that Moshe felt that he was too pressured because he had taken on too much of a load, right? Too heavy of a load of judgment, and therefore he felt that if he would appoint other judges who would share the burden with him, then he'd be able to focus more and be ma'ayin heitev, and he would actually not make any mistakes. So that's the discussion that we had yesterday. Today, we want to go back to Rabbi Tanchum. So let's just see if we could find Rabbi Tanchum here. Just one second. We're on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. Does anybody have access to the air conditioning here and know how to turn it on? Maybe we could get a little extra AC in here. I don't know. If you're not bothered by it, then chas shalom. I don't want to disturb anyone. But right outside this door, there's on top, you'll see a button. If you press it, you'll get air conditioning, I think. It's supposed to be a very warm day today. Okay. So if you're on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, and you count down how many lines, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down, we have Rabbi Tanchum. Rabbi Tanchum has a different take on the pasuk Botzea Berech Nietz Hashem. And he says Botzea Berech is not a reference to Pshara, because that would put Pshara in a negative light, but rather it's a reference to the whole catastrophe of the Egel, and specifically Aaron's role in the Egel. And we had a long discussion yesterday about how Aaron was trying to decide between two, you know, which is the lesser of two evils, between either complying with their request to create an Egel or refusing and being murdered, and then they would have been guilty of murdering both a Navi and a Kohen in one shot. And Aaron made a pshara, he made a decision that it's better that they violate the prohibition against Avodah Zarah by worshipping the Egel than murder by killing me, because he had already seen that who was murdered before him. Chur, so he felt that there was no question they would murder him if he refused to comply, and then they would be guilty of the murder of a kohen and navi, and that's called an avera she'ein la takanta, de lo havi le takanta. No, there's no tshuva, there's no kapara for that avera. It would have spelled out the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash down the line. Again, the iron obviously is before the Beis HaMikdash, and it's because later on that Zechariah was murdered that Hashem brought about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, because Zechariah was both a Navi and a Kohen. So he says, let them, it's better if they worship an idol, because Islu Takanta, Efshalu Takanta B'tshuva. There's a possibility of Tshuva. Now, if you have the pages that I gave out to you, we're looking at page Ayin Tes. If anyone doesn't have the pages, it could be that we put the spare pages here in the archives. You can take a look. And we're looking at a capital in Tehillim. Steve, you have it open. Maybe you could pass it forward. Which is capital Pei Beis. And I think it'll ring a bell. If I'm not mistaken... Here, Don, maybe you could do me a favor and open up to the Shir Shal Yom. I assume you recited it this morning. If you didn't, then now's a good time to recite it. And I don't think it's totally coincidental that we're going to study Kapitel Pei Beis today in its relation to Masechta Sanhedrin on the very day that we read this Kapitel, just 2 hours ago, or whatever minyan you davened it. Am I right? This is the Shir Shal Yom Yom Shlishi. Mizmor LeYosef Elokim Nitzav Adas Kel. Anybody have a...
If I can find it, I'll...
Oh, okay. I would tell you what page it's on, except that in the synagogue I davened it today, they didn't announce pages. You found it? Okay. There it is. Hayom Yom Shlishi V'Shabbos. Now tell me what the theme in one single word of this capital is. I'll read it again. Elokim nitzav badas kel bekerav elokim yishpot ad masai tishpitu avel shiftu dal v'yosom. Okay. Mm-hmm. What is the subject? It goes on and on. I could read it over and over again. It ends with kuma elokim shafta aretz. Same word repeats itself time after time. Namely, what? Mishpat. Mishpat means din, judgment. So the subject of this capital is clearly judgment, with many, many different statements. Both see the positive side of good judgment, the negative and the reverse. Elokim nitzav adas kel. God is there. Be careful. Elokim yishpot. He's there with the judges. But on the other hand, if they are shofet avel, and so forth and so on, then terrible things are going to happen. Now, in the middle of this very short capital, I always wait till Tuesday because I get out a little earlier from davening. I think, except for Friday, I think it's even shorter. Well, it's about the same size as Friday. I don't know, I didn't count words. But in any event, in the middle of this capital, it says the following, Yimotu kol mosdei eretz, which means that the foundations of the earth will yimotu, will crumble. And pashtus, I would say that that's a reference to judgment. It means that if, as the pasuk, previous pasuk says, ad masai, till when are you going to tishpatu avel, are you going to pervert justice, upnei rishoyim tisu sela, and you give preference to the rishoyim, the evildoers, because they probably paid off the judges, the mafioso guys. And at the end, Yimotu kol mosdei aretz. So that would fit into the general theme of this capital. It's a unified, integral theme, and it's all about either the significance of justice and the divine presence in justice, or on the contrary, the significance and the repercussions of the perversion of justice, in which it will undermine the basic foundations of the earth. However, to our surprise, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah takes this very same pasuk and uses it for something else. So let's read the pasuk itself. It says the following: Yimotu kol mosdei aretz. Ani amarti Elokim atem. Now, sometimes, very fascinating, because sometimes the word ani, which usually refers to either the author of the poem, or it refers to God, if it's nevuah, but here it would seem that, and I'll show you this in the Gemara of Hodesor, which we're about to look at, the ani here is the people of Israel. So sometimes the word ani is a reference to the people of Israel. Now, when did the people of Israel say Elohim? When did that word Elohim express itself, or when was it uttered? At the time of the Egel. Because at the time of the Egel, the Jewish people said, Ela Elohecha Yisrael. These are the gods of Israel. So you'll take a look here at a paragraph on page Ayin Tes that starts with the word Vehine B'Tehillim, and you'll see that on this very pasuk, which is in the middle of our kapitel, kapitel Pei Beis, the Gemara Avot Zohar and Daf Hei darshins that this pasuk is referring to the Maisa Egel, that Ani Amarti means when the Jewish people said Elohim, that this is our God, and they pointed to the Egel. So that's a Gemara where? In Avot Zohar. And again, like any Agadita, the super commentary on Agadita is the Marsha. So the Marsha asks, I don't get it. This pasuk, if it's referring to the Egel, is totally out of place. The Eino Shayach LeMizmar, said the subject and the theme of this Mizmar Pei Beis is judgment. Shemedaber, the subject is Kulo, completely from beginning end to B'dayonim, and especially to Dayonim Rishoyim. Ela B'Mizmar Deliel. Now for this I would need a book of Tehillim. If you can find, maybe do a word search for Shema Ami Ve'aidabach Ve'lo Shema Ami Koli. Okay, anyway, that's the capital that refers to the rebelliousness of the people of Israel. And the pasuk of Anmarti Elohim, which means Maisa Egel, that belongs to that capital. I don't have the number in front of me because I don't have Tehillim in front of me. I had asked for Tehillim, but I guess, you know, you can ask, you know, it doesn't mean that people will necessarily comply with your request. So that's...
You gave it back.
Right? Oh, you do have Tehillim. Oh, okay, good. All right. So let's see, just one second, if we can find this. Here, the psalm that precedes Pei Beis, which is obviously Pei Aleph, is a psalm about the rebelliousness of the people of Israel. And it says in that psalm, Yisrael, I admonish the people of Israel, im tishmali, please hearken to my voice, v'lo yibcha el zar, v'al tishtachve le'el nechar, anochi Hashem elokecha, hamalcha me'eretz Mitzrayim, achav pifka v'alehu, and Yisrael lo avali, but the people of Israel did not comply with, they were not obedient. V'lo shama ami l'koli, and my nation did not listen to my voice. Because lu ami shomeli, had they listened, had they hearkened to my warning, and b'drachei alecha, had the Yisrael gone in my ways, then oyvechem achana, I would have destroyed their enemies. This is all about the rebelliousness of the people of Israel in worshipping idols. Says the Marsha, the pasuk of Ani Amarti Elohim Atem, which is Elohim's reference to the idolatry of the Egel, that pasuk really belonged to Pei Aleph and not to Pei Beis. Why did David shift it around? And the answer to this question we're going to find in one of the commentaries on Tehillim, which is called the Be'er Avraham. If anyone could go online, you could look up in HebrewBooks.org who authored the Be'er Avraham. I don't know when or who authored it. And he writes the following, that this capital, right here, Pei Beis, which we read this morning, is to be divided up into three parts. There are three symbolisms. And those three symbolisms refer to the foundations of the earth. What carries the earth? What keeps it from collapsing? So it's not Hercules, but it's al shlosh dvarim olam omed, al adin, v'ala emes, v'ala shalom. Okay, there's din, emes, and shalom. And now he says the following. The pasuk says, which I'm not finding right this second, emes u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'sharechem. Right? Is that the pasuk in Zechariah? Let me just get this right. Does anybody remember the pasuk in Zechariah that we studied yesterday? I just want to make sure if this is the same. If this is the same pasuk, just a second. Yes, I got it right. How do you like that? I looked out. So if anybody likes to write a little note in the page that I gave out to you with a little caret here, you could add Zechariah Perkches. Okay? And I'm going to add it in mine, Zechariah Ches. So it says there, Emes u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'sharechem. And there are three descriptions here of judgment. One is called Emes, the other is called Mishpat, and the third is called Shalom. You may recall that Rabbi Shu ben Karcha had derived from this pasuk that there's such a thing called Mishpat Shal Shalom, which is Pshara. But in any event, so says the Be'er Avram that this pasuk in Zechariah gives us three categories of judgment. And they are the following. The first one is Mishpat, which appears actually as the second one in this sequence, but anyway, it's Mishpat. The second one is Emes, which is called Emes Lamito, a higher level of truth. You remember that in the case of Dimaruma that we discussed. And then we have the third level, which is called Shalom, that's called Pshara. And these are all three modes of Din, three alternative ways of justice. Keneged Adin HaPashut, Omar. Now he says that we go back to our kapitel for the Mizmah Shir of Yom HaShlishi, which is Pei Beis, and we see that it says Shiftu Dal V'yosom, and he says that Shiftu here refers to Mishpat, which he calls Din Pashut. Then it says Paltu Dal V'evyon. In other words, there's a poor person and he's going to lose a heck of a lot of money according to the strict application of law. Paltu. Paltu means lift him up. You know, when you're falling down, you lift someone up. That's called paltu. And save him from falling. That's pshara. In other words, instead of his having to pay 1,000, he'll only pay 500. And then it says at the end of the pasuk, lo yadu v'lo yavinu. And he says that that is a reference to Emes Lamito, meaning there's a higher level of Yediyah and Havana, and according to that higher level, we'll never know the answer to this question. And that's why the judge should recuse himself. Why? Because he's Emes Lamito. The very next pasuk says, Yimotu kol mosdei aretz. And what is that? It means if we're not committed and successfully implementing these three modes of justice, whether it's Mishpat, whether it's Emes, whether it's Shalom, then Yimotu kol mosdei aretz. The entire universe is going to collapse. Because these are the three Dvarim mentioned in the Mishnah in Avos of Din, Emes, and Shalom, Shalem Ha'olam Omed. These are the three pillars of the universe. And therefore, Yimotu kol mosdei aretz. If we're not totally, absolutely committed to these three levels of Shiftu, of Paltu, and of Loyadu, which means Mishpat, Pshara, and Emes Lamito, then what's going to happen? Then Yimotu kol mosdei aretz. Fine. So now, Rabosai, we have a whole new insight into what we recite on a weekly basis on Tuesdays. And that is that if you analyze this kapitel, you will reveal three different modes of din, of justice. And not only that, you'll be actually, you'll shed a new light on your motu kol mostei aretz, that the whole earth is going to collapse. Why? Because these three modes of justice, which are indicated by the previous pasuk of shiftu dal v'yosam, paltu dal v'yevyam, lo yodu v'yavinu, these three psukim, if they are not upheld, then we go back to the Mishnah in Avos that says al shlosh dvarim olam omed, al adin v'al ha'emes v'al ha'shalom, and therefore yimotu kol mostei aretz. Ah, if this be the case, now we can shed a whole new light on the Gemara in Avodah Zorah. The Gemara in Avodah Zorah identifies this Yimotu Kol Mostei Aretz and Ima Ani Amarti Elohim Atem as a reference to the Egel. He says, what is the Egel doing here? Right? That was the Marsha's question. The Egel should be in the previous capital, Pei Aleph, which is discussing the rebelliousness of the Jewish people if they worship idols. That would have been appropriate for the Egel. The Gemara in Rabbi Tanchum has an alternative interpretation of Motzei HaBerech Neitz Hashem. It's not a reference to Pshara, because we don't accept Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Yossi that Pshara is a dam. We can accept that Pshara is certainly okay, at least, and if not, maybe even recommended. But rather, this pasuk of Botsea, which means to make a compromise, is a reference to Aaron. That's what Rabbi Tanchum says here in Sanhedrin of Zion. Now, what was Aaron's compromise about? What did he cause? What were the repercussions of his ill thought out, ill prepared compromise?
The Eagle.
Correct? His pshara, that's what we said in the name of the Meiri yesterday, that he made a pshara on Isur Veheter. In judgment, you can make a pshara, that's fine. But his botzea, his pshara was on Isurim. So he started making cheshbonos. You know, if I'll make the Egel, well, that'll be this kind of avera. And if I don't make the Egel, it'll be the other avera. They'll kill me and it's Ritzicha. Well, says the Meiri, that kind of compromise you're not allowed to make. Don't actively create an egel and participate in Avodah Zarah, which is one of the three cardinal sins for which you have to give up your life, just because you're trying to avoid a different Avera, a different Isur. We don't have a compromise when it comes to Isurim. The Torah doesn't allow that. And as a result of this mistake, of this grave error of Aaron, this was the Shoresh, the root of Cheta Egel. Nidesha Aaron Osa Pshara Le'inyan Isur, as the Miri says. And therefore, this fits beautifully into the parasha of the Shoftim Rishoyim. Because they also, apparently, were guilty of that kind of sin. They also tried to make psharas. They decided, you know, alright, we'll violate this Isur instead of that Isur. L'kach nichtava, that's why this pasuk of Ani Amarti Elohim Atem was incorporated by David HaMelech into this parasha, even though this pasuk is a reference to the Chet HaEgel, and you would have said ostensibly belongs to the previous kapitel. No, it belongs here, because the Shoftim are being accused of the same kind of ill, of a distortion of Pshara, a use of Pshara that's not acceptable, and that's what they did in their capacity as judges. Ulekach nichtuva hach b'mizmar, they'll bring down the world. So it's beautiful here, because the entire capital, number pay base, from beginning to end is addressing itself to the judges, and it's telling, don't judge the way Aaron judged and caused the Egel. Don't use pshara and compromise in a way that deviates from the law of the Torah. The Torah advocates pshara in litigants, but not in Isurim. And you're going to start making all sorts of judgment calls about when we can get involved in Isurim for the sake of avoiding greater Isurim and violations that have no takana. That's none of your business. You have to do justice, and there's no compromise in Isur Vehet. I'm thinking to myself, if I can come up with an example,
justice here is Mishpat again. And not Mishpat.
This is the application of of Dayanim.
I understand that.
To Issa v'Hefter.
But you kept saying the three pillars of justice. Right. Justice and translated as din or just
din.
As
din.
Not stuff.
Din. Three modes of din, right? And and again, we're assuming now, like Rabbi Shimon Karcha, that Pshara is a mode of din. You remember that? Because it's a Mishpat of Shalom.
Okay.
But Al Shlosh Advarim, there are three modes or alternative ways of judgment that are all the foundations of the world, and that's how the Bear of Ram interprets the Mishnah in Avos. And now we're talking about judges in Issa v'Heter. So just give me a minute, Rabbi Osa. I don't know if I'll come up with anything, but a second. I'm not sure if this is a good example, but there's a sugya in Masechta Shabbos about someone who puts a dough in the oven on Shabbos. And now, right, Daftal. And now there's something called Rediyas HaPas. Until Krimas Pas Batata, which is the Shir of Afir, if you remove the dough before it crusts on top, then you undermine, you obviate the violation of Afir. So Gemara wants to know, can I be Rode the Pas, which is a lesser violation of Shabbos, that's called a Chachma Vein Malacha, in order to prevent myself from a more serious violation, and a violation of Malacha Safir. And you'll be shocked to know that the Gemara's Maskana, the conclusion is that Ein Omrim Lo. We don't tell him to be rode in the pass and violate what we would call an Isur Kal in order to prevent a violation of an Isur Chamur. And you and I might have said, well, logically, let's make a pshar over here. Well, why not advocate in favor of a violation of a lesser Isur in order to prevent you from violating a higher Isur? But the answer is that we don't have pshar when it comes to Isur Be'etah. So you might come to me with a chicken, and I might say to you, you know what? Maybe it's better that I'll allow you to eat the chicken, because if I don't allow you to eat the chicken, you're going to eat chazetreif or something. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to allow you to eat, let's say, basar of b'chalav, which is only d'rabbanan, in order to prevent you from eating a cheeseburger. That's not your business. You know, that's not...
Yeah, but you have plenty of counterexamples. Gemara says, arabo amamono. So samet lehashem, if you have your wallet in your pocket, we tell him, holeh pako pako medaleramas. We do let him do the... There's two sugyas on pako pako medaleramas.
But if I'm not mistaken, isn't there a principle there that Ashvus and Ben Ashmoshos, that there are, what's the language? You're talking about Ben Ashmoshos now?
I'm talking Samach L'Hashem. No, even when it
Samach L'Hashecha.
No, even when it comes into, even after it's Shabbos.
So again, I'd have to go through the Sugya, Joseph, but I would be willing to sign in the dotted line without seeing the Sugya, that we're talking about a case where the Rabbanan didn't institute the Gzera. That it's a case of a Shvus and it's, you know, for the sake of this or for the sake of that.
In the case of the dough too, that's only a muksa issue. Moving the
not Issa. Really. Rediyas HaPas is called a chachma. I think that's a malacha derabbanon. Right?
The rabbanon, same correct.
But it's not a shvus derabbanon. In a shvus derabbanon, we're going to say that shvus derabbanon b'makom mitzvah is not a violation. Basically, what I'm saying to you as a methodology, any sugya that you find that allows you to do X in order to prevent Y, it means that in the case of X, it's not awesome. That's my methodological premise. Again, I have to know exactly if it's a Karolist, if it's a Rishus HaRabim, if it's a Maisa Malacha, if it's a Malacha Darabonon.
You understand what I'm saying? If you didn't have a keys in your pocket, you had something else.
Right, so that's what I'm going to tell you, that in certain situations, Rabbanon never created the East. And that's going to be my method. All right, I don't know. Again, Tzarchiyun, you know, this is a PhD program. You know, you take this on to write your next thesis. But the premise here is that, you know, you don't have a right to be matir one Easter for the sake of another Easter. Tzarech Biur. We have a principle, Eina pargod nin elis bifnei bali tshuva. There is no violation of the Torah that doesn't allow tshuva. So how could Aaron HaKohen, the great Aaron, come to the conclusion, quote, lo havi le takanta, that there's no possibility of tshuva for this avera. So the Gvuras Yitzchak approaches this from two perspectives and offers two answers. But again, Rabosi, you'll only appreciate these answers if you appreciate the question. You know, the answers are as good as the question. The underlying premise of the question is that there ain't no such thing as lesle takanta. There's no avera where the doors and the gates of tshuva are closed. So his first answer is an interesting knetch. I mean, he sort of like, I call it, he dodges the ball. And he says the following. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva has five categories of averos where nolim darkei tshuva b'fnei Hashem, where it's very, very difficult for a person to do tshuva. You know, he's going to have to break down the doors to do tshuva because these are very serious averos. No, I shouldn't say that. It's not because of the seriousness of the averos. It's really because of the fact that the avera by its very nature doesn't really lend itself to tshuva. I'll give you an example. The Rambam speaks about gozel min harabim. Let's say, for example, you know, this publicly owned property and he steals it. How is he going to do tshuva? He has to go to every member of the public and he has wronged them because he absconded with something that belongs to the community. And so forth and so on. So the Rambam has five cases. If I had a Rambam, I would read them to you. But one of the cases is Sonei Eset Tochachos. There are certain people, they are always in the right, and you could never criticize them. They will not accept any rebuke. And he says the following, that the key, the catalyst to tshuva is going to be Tochacha. A person whose ears are totally closed and you cannot permeate, you know, you cannot penetrate beyond his the wall, you know, he's surrounded himself with an impermeable wall that says I'm always in the right. Nobody could criticize me. In such a case, the Rambam says the doors of tshuva close. Not that they close that he can't do tshuva. It's going to be very difficult to get this guy to do tshuva because he's not willing to listen. He's called Sonei Eset Tochachos.
Is that what Aaron meant in terms of Ritzicha?
Oh, so that's what he wants to say. That Aaron was both a Kohen and a Navi. There are two categories of leadership that the nature of that leadership is Tochacha. Their responsibility vis-a-vis the nation at large is to be the mochichim. One is the Kohen and the other is the Navi. Again, the Navi is intuitively apparent. The Navi is there to give tshuva, tochacha, and bring the people to do tshuva. When the Navi berates the people and he humiliates them, he's only doing it because when a person feels humiliated, he realizes the depth that he's, you know, the plummets that he's gone down to, and therefore he'll do tshuva. In the case of a Kohen, the Torah says that the Kohen is like the angel of God, and the Pasuk says, "Vitori Yavakshu Mipiu." You know, if the Torah scholars of the generation who dedicate themselves to study of Torah will give us guidance, then we'll be able to do tshuva. Who are the Torah leaders and the scholars of the generation? So the Navi, Yeshayahu HaNavi says, Sifsei Kohen Yishvu Das, V'tori Yivak Yishvi Pim. So here they're killing a Kohen and a Navi. In a sense, they have excluded themselves from Tochacha. I have only one kash on this pshat. Because even with the death of Aaron, Moshe Rabbeinu is still alive. But maybe at this point, Moshe Rabbeinu is lost. You know, he hasn't come down from the mountain. We don't know where he is. But I'm more fascinated by the next interpretation. I would press the return button. V'yesh lomar od on the fourth line, on the left column. The Medrash tells us that Aaron made the following declaration: if they will murder me, and I'm both a Kohen and a Navi, immediately golus, exile, is written in stone. It's engraved in stone. There will be golus. He quotes one of the Darshanim who gave a drush on Rosh Hashanah. His name is Reb Chaim Volzinamer. I don't know who he is. And he says the following. What is so terrible about Golus? Golus is meant, there's a certain built-in paradox to Golus. The purpose of Golus is kidei lemarek avonos, to, in a sense, purify us in a cathartic experience of all the averos that we're guilty of. That's what the experience of Golus is meant to achieve. However, in reality, Golus boomerangs and has the exact opposite effect. Why? Adarav, machmas ha-golus, boyim yoser l'kama avonis. When the Jewish people are in exile and they're under the influence of the cultures, the nations of the world, that brings them to increase their averos. And now, as a result of the increase in averos, tzorach gam al avonos shel golus od yisurim. Now as a result, you know, the suffering of exile itself is not going to be sufficient, because that would only cleanse them from X amount of sins. But now they've done even more sins in Golus because of the influence of Golus, and now they need another set of Yisurim on top of that. So Golus is a good thing, but ultimately it's a bad thing. That's what motivated Aaron. Aaron HaKohen said the following: Im Yu Golim is Lo Yem Takana. Why? Because of this Ein L'Dover Sof that we saw in this drush of Rabbi Chaim. The Ein L'Dover Sof phenomenon, or what do we call it, a vicious cycle, if you're familiar with that phrase, is that Aaron is saying Ein Lo Takana. Well, what's going to happen? The people, God will declare that the people have to go to Golus. Well, as a result of that decree, not only will they suffer the punishment of Golus, but that's going to cause them to do more and more averos, more avonos. They'll need more suffering in Golus. And the more the suffering, the more the averos, the more deep they're entrenched in Golus. And it's Ein L'Dover Sof. The Aaron could not perceive an ultimate takana in which the situation of Golus would come to some termination and the people would be purified. You may remember that Rashi in Sefer Dvarim calls the Golus of Mitzrayim a Kura Barzel. I mean, that's the Pasuk says Kura Barzel. You remember that in the old days, Rashi points out, they used to take unrefined gold or other precious metals and put it into a furnace. And the furnace would burn out the impurities. And that's what the experience of exile was meant to be, to cathartically remove the impurities from Klal Yisrael. But paradoxically, as a result of the experience of Golus, more and more averus are done. And people, you know, are stuck in this vicious cycle, this whirlpool that it keeps going around and around and inward over itself. That's what Aaron was worried about. Don, did you want to say something?
It's
Valojan. Oh, I didn't know how to read it. I'm sorry. Yeah, Valojan, right. Now we press the return button. Ulam tsarach biu. What does it mean? Umakayim bi, if they murder me, it will be a fulfillment of a pasuk in Eicha that says, Yeharig b'migdash Hashem kohen v'navi. And that pasuk in Eicha is a reference to Zechariah. So Aaron is saying that this would have been the first round of the fulfillment of this pasuk of Yeharig b'migdash Hashem kohen v'navi if they would murder Aaron. And then the second round, that's already going to clinch the golus when it happens at the time of Zechariah. I don't get it. He says, I can admit that maybe Aaron was a Navi, but at this point, was he a Kohen? Or let's ask the question a little bit differently. Were they Kohen? The Kiddush of Kahuna for the Avodas HaMikdash is going to happen later on. We'll have it in Parshas Baloscha. But at this point in time, the Mishnah says in Zvachim, who were the quote unquote Kohanim who were in charge of the Avoda, the Bechorims. He says, Adshalo Hukama Mishkan, Hayubamos Mutaros, they brought Korbanos before the establishment of Mishkan on Bamos, on private altars, but the Avoda, the actual service of bringing the Korban, was implemented by the Bechorims.
Who's the Bechorim?
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. In truth, there are many sources that prove that Aaron was not a Bechor, but maybe he was a Bechor. Again, this is all very complicated. He says the following. The answer to this problem is in Zvachim. The Gemara quotes a Machlokas Tanoim, and according to one view of the Tanoim, B'Sinai, already at Har Sinai, Nitztavu Kfar Ala Kuhuna. So the transition between the Avoda and the Bechoros and the Avoda of the Kuhuna took place when? At Har Sinai. In Kei Yeshlomo we can interpret that our Gemara of Aaron, Kohai, is going according to Hanach Tanoi, according to that view, which means that the Avoda was already shifted from the shoulders of the Bechoros onto the shoulders of the Kohanim, and Aaron was the first Kohen. And already at that point of Har Sinai, again it's a little bit confusing to me because Har Sinai Lechora means after the Torah was given. At this point, Moshe Rabbeinu receives the Torah, but he hasn't yet brought it down to Klal Yisrael. But he's assuming, you'd have to see the Gemara in Zvachim for this, that the word Sinai here refers to something that already was already historically set in motion at the time that Aaron made this declaration. But now let's take a look at the pasuk in Zechariah. The pasuk in Zechariah says, "I'm sorry, Necha says him Yeharik b'Migdash Hashem Kohen v'Novi." But wait a minute, was the Mishkan built yet? Obviously not. So how is Aaron afraid of a murder that takes place in the Migdash? There's no Migdash here. The Mishkan hasn't been built. The Yesh Lomar, based on a sugi Masechta Bechoros, that also ayom shehukam haMishkan karvu lahem liYisrael chovos mei karo lo. In other words, the difference is that before the Mishkan was built or was established, they could bring karbanos nedava, right, voluntary karbanos, but they couldn't bring karbanos chova. So let's say, for example, he's going to give the example in a minute of a chatos v'yasham that would not be brought before the Mishkan on a Bama. Now again, there are two types of Bamos. There's the last sugya in Zvachim, there's a Bamas Yochid and a Bamas Tzibur. Even on a Bamas Tzibur, you couldn't bring a Chatos Vinosh because that's a Korban Chova. And that's Rabbeinu Gersha and Me'ora Gola. Fine. Haray, the Af Kodem HaKomas HaMishkan Hoysa Bamas Tzibur. There was an entity called a Bamas Tzibur even before the Mishkan was established. However, Rabbeinu Gershon points out that you could not bring a Korban Chova on a Bamas Tzibur, and how much more so you couldn't bring it on a Bamas Yochid. You could only bring a Korban Nedava. If this be the case, then the Mizbeach that was established at Har Sinai was a Bamas Tzibur. And a Bamas Tzibur has a din of a Migdash. Mashmavi said, the Bamas Sinai, lo haya rak lefi shah, el ad hakamas haMishkan. So that altar that was set up at the foot of the mountain would remain functional as far as Karbanos Nedavos are concerned up until the Mishkan. Once the Mishkan was built, there was no possibility of a Bama, not even a Bamas Tzibur. But on the other hand, we can now bring Korbanos Chova like Chatos V'Yosha. Is Kevan de Hoyla Toras Bomas Tzibur, if that altar that was built, that was erected by Aaron at the foot of the mountain, had the status of a Bomas Tzibur, you could bring Korbanos on that Boma. Is Shapir Komar Aaron de Makayim Beiki Yahorik B'Migdash Hashem Koim V'Novi. So this Bomas Tzibur, again based on the Sugin Zvachim, which predated the Mishkan, had the status of a Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Now he asks the following question. Rashi says, let's take a look at Rashi if we can. We Where does Rashi mention Zechariah here on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph? Oh, Rashi v'lo havyulei takanta. It's about eight lines down from the top. To sofon lasos came b'zachariah ben Yodov v'chare beis hamigdash al kah. So Rashi says that the churban beis hamigdash was a result of the murder of Zechariah. Tzarech biu, third line. Halo Zechariah nerai kamashonim with ne'achurban. It doesn't stim historically. There were years that passed after the murder of Zechariah until the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So how can you tell me that the Mikdash was destroyed because of the killing, the murder of Zechariah? Tzarech lomar, the after HaMikdash nechrav bishvil kach. Does anybody remember the reason the Gemara gives in Yuma why the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? The three cardinal sins, anybody remember? For Gilui Arayish, Vichazdom, and Vodazorah. He's saying now, no, the Mikdash was destroyed because of the murder of Zechariah.
Because
of God was waiting to see maybe the people would do tshuva for such a horrendous violation. V'lo nechtar dinam bishvil ariga Zechariah ad acharkach. When God saw that the people were continuing in their evil ways and even increasing their evil, God decided now's the time for the Churban. But the original Gzar Din, the final decision and the decree, was signed and sealed at the time of Hariga, the murder of Zechariah. God was willing to stay off punishment if things would have improved, but there was no improvement.
Was he a Kohen as well as a Nami?
He was a Kohen, yes. Oh. So now, what are we going to do with the Gemara in Yuma that says that the first Mikdash was destroyed because of Gilui Arayish v'Chas Domim and not just because of Avodah Zarah? The answer is Ikra Churban. The primary reason for that caused the destruction was Mishfil Avodah Zarah Kidemuchach Bekroy. V'lo Dai Shelo Shamula Novi Shochicho Osam Shelo Lavod Avodah Zarah Elgam Hargu Osam. Wow, this is a knach. He's saying that Zechariah's whole purpose was to try to influence the people they should desist from idol worship, and they rejected him. Not only did they reject him and continue to worship idols, but they had him murdered. So in other words, we have the ultimate of Avodah Zarah here with the murder of Zechariah. Al-Kain Avur Zeba Ikra Churban. But even though that was the cause of the Churban, Hashem waited to see if they would be perhaps penitent, and at the end they were even more severe violation. Now the Marshad, page Pei, asks the following kasha. How can the Aaron claim that he's a Kohen? Lo nitna kuhuna la Aaron v'lo yamigdash v'lo mishkan. At that point, there was no avoda of the Kohen because the Mikdash was not built. So the Marsha has not yet introduced this concept that we mentioned before about a bomas tzibur. So therefore, he's perplexed by the fact that Aaron considers himself a Kohen. The tirates, but the Marsha answers, Sha Aaron bechar hoya. Even before the Mishkan was erected, any Jew could set up his own private altar, and there was even a Bamas Sibur, as we said before, for the public. And who would do the Avodah? The Avodah was done by the Bechoros. Aaron was a Bechor, and therefore he has the status of a Kohen, meaning he's in charge of the Avodah as a Bechor. Ad Kan Dvar. Now, there are two points in the Marsha, two premises, both of which have to be analyzed and have to be, shall we say, scrutinized. Number one, he writes that the kahuna was not given to Aaron. But that's not true. The Gemara says in Zvachim that when Moshe Rabbeinu argued against God for 7 days consecutively, refusing to accept the mantle of leadership to be the Gol Shel Yisrael, on the 7th day, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Shlach Novi Atishlach, send it with Aaron. He's 3 years older than me. And he'll be insulted. So even on the seventh day, Moshe Rabbeinu was still persevering in his rejection, his refusal to take the job, the mantle of leadership. So Rab Shimon ben Yochai says that Vayicharaf Hashem ben Moshe, on the seventh day, the pasuk testifies that God got angry with Moshe. What was the anger? The anger was that Kohuna was taken away from Moshe and it was granted to Aaron. And that's the pasuk that says, V'hine achicha Aaron yotze l'kroscha. He will take over the Kohuna. It's clear from Rav Shimon bar Yochai in Zvachim that the Kohuna was given to Aaron already at the time of the Maisa Sneh, way before the parsha of the Egel. So why is the Marsha bothered here? Well, Aaron is not a Kohen, and his answer is that Aaron is a Bechor. Aaron was already appointed as the Kohen when Hashem says, Hinei Aaron Achicha Bo. So he answers Nireh, he thinks that the Marsha understands that even though Aaron was already granted Kohuna, but he wasn't what you call a Kohen Oved, he could not do the Avoda as a Kohen. He had the theoretical Mina Gavra, he was appointed as a Kohen, but he was not a Kohen Befal. In actuality, he could not do the Avoda. If, for example, somebody would set up a private Bama and ask Aaron to do the Akrova as a Kohen, Aaron couldn't do so. So he's not a Kohen Oved. And when the Pasuk says that they murdered a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, which was Zechariah, it's referring to a Kohen Oved. But Aaron is not a Kohen Oved, even if he was granted Kohuna. So theoretically, in terms of his status, he's a Kohen. But that's not what the Pasuk is referring to. The Pasuk is referring to a Kohen serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Aaron couldn't serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Who would serve on the Bama? Only the Bechoros. So the Marsha answers, and now we're going to get to the second premise of the Marsha, that Aaron was a Bechor. Vehine, in the next paragraph, HaMarsha Kosev Sha'aron Bechor Hoya. Tzorech Biur. Who was the oldest of the three children of Amram and Yocheved? It was none other than Miriam. Rashi mentions it in Masechta Shabbos, and it's an explicit Medrash in Shmos Rabbah. How could the Marsha claim that Aaron was a Bechor when Aaron in fact was not a Bechor? Now the balance of this paragraph, I'm just going to read it on a superficial level. Maybe tomorrow we can understand it. It's very, very complicated. But let me just give it on a simple level. He has a Yerushalmi in Megillah. Meheichan dorash hadorash etei avoda bibechoros, kodem shehukan mishkan. How do we know that up until the Mishkan, it was the Bechor who was in charge of the Avoda? Because it says, Ki li kol Bechor biyom hakosi kol Bechor be'eretz Mitzrayim. The Bechoros were chosen on that night of the 15th of Nisan of Yetzias Mitzrayim when Makas Bechoros took place. So Hashem said, I'm going to spare the Bechoros of Klal Yisrael and I'm going to upgrade them to the level of Avoda, that they get the Avoda. Kodem Lachem, what happened up until Makas Bechoros? Who did the Avoda? And the answer is, based on a drush of Atikach Rivka's Big Day Esav Benoah HaGadol HaChamudos, that's what it says in the Yerushalmi. So what does it say in that pasuk? So the super commentary on the Yerushalmi is the Korban Eder. Piresh, Shlohoya ela Kohen Echad, meaning there was only one person who was isolated, who was singled out to do the Avoda. And he would have what's called the Big Day Chamudos. The Big Day Chamudos with the Begadim and the Kohen. And that comes as inheritance from Malki Tzedek, who was a Kohen. Now what happened? It was up to that one single Kohen to decide who would be the next in line. And who are you, Mamana Kohen Acher Tachtov? That's what the Korban Eder says, that from this parsha of the Big Day Chamudos, we learn that up until Makas Bechoros, there was only one Kohen in any generation, and he would appoint, it sounds like by his own choice, he would choose who he thought would be Roy, would be fit to be the next Kohen. But then, the Korban Eda offers another possibility. Inami agadol shebebanov afilu eno b'char haya meshamesh tachtav. That he wouldn't just make this Kohen an arbitrary decision who should be the next Kohen or Oved, but rather he would choose the oldest of his sons. Now, the Korban Eda adds three words, afilu eno b'char. What does that mean, Eina Bechar? Exactly. He has an older sister. So in a case of an older sister, even though the brother is not a Bechar technically, but nevertheless he was appointed by the Kohen to be the next Kohen in line. Hare, da'ach halacha, de Bechar le'avodah, toli b'peter rechem. In other words, this halacha that the firstborn is going to get the avoda, that emerged as a halachic requirement effective as of Makas Bechoris. But before Makas Bechoris, it didn't depend on who was the firstborn, but rather it would depend upon who was appointed by that one Kohen to take over the mantle of Kahuna after he would gone. And it could be that he would choose whoever he wanted, or possibly in the second alternative shot of the Korban Eda, it would be the Gadol Shebebanov. It would be his oldest son, even though he had an older sister. Now Aaron, because there were only three children, was the Gadol Shebebanav. And therefore he had a din of avoda up until Makas Bechoros. Okay, that doesn't solve our problem, because we're already after Makas Bechoros. Li'achar Makas Bechoros, then the avoda depends upon Peter Rechem. Is Memela, Aaron was stripped of his status as a Kohen Ha'ovid, meaning as the Bechor that would be chosen as the takeover Kohen. If King Tikshe was still in the dark here, that the Marsha writes that Aaron was Bechor and he had the Avoda, and if he had the status of a Kohen. Well, Mimon HaShach, it doesn't make any sense. If he's talking about a Kohen Peter Rechem, which means after Makas Bechoros, Yushalmi says it depends upon who's the firstborn to this mother. Well, Aaron was not firstborn to Yocheved, it was Miriam. And if he's talking before Makas Bechoros, and therefore Aaron had the status of the Kohen because he was chosen as the Kohen because he was the Gadol Shebebanav, even though he wasn't Peter Rechem. Well, our incident of the Egel took place subsequent to Makas Bechoros, so Aaron Mimon HaShach was not a Kohen HaOved. He couldn't be a Kohen HaOved in the Beis Hamikdash. Beis Hamikdash was not built yet. He couldn't be a Kohen HaOved in the Bamos because he was not a Bechor. El, what are you going to tell me that he was the chosen Bechor as a Gadol Shebi Echav? And he has the avodah, that would only apply up until but not beyond Makas Bechoros. So there's no way we can make any sense here at this Marsha that he was the Kohen HaOved. And therefore, we have to go back to what we saw on the previous page, that with regard to Aaron, he had already a din of a Kohen HaOved because of what's called a Bamas Tzibur, and that was the Beis Hamikdash at that time. All right, Rabbosai? So let's make a note of where we get up to. Thank you so much. And our next shiur tomorrow will be about Talmud Torah, which is always one of my all-time favorite topics. Okay, then. So I wish everyone a great day. So we have an Ian shiur at 10:15 for those who can be here. 10:30, I'm sorry, 10:30. Get me stuff. Originally it was 10:15, then we changed it to 10:30. So you might be around, Mitch?
Yeah, I'll
be around. Okay, and Steve, you'll be around? Yeah, that's okay. Don, you might be around? No, roommate?
I'm too.
Okay, 45 minutes until 11:15, and we'll try to wrap it up on Shara Niskal. Okay, then we started yesterday. Don't worry, Mitch, I'll give a little hakdama. And if you want already, you can look over the pages, which I gave out yesterday. There may be some extra ones here. If you don't, I'll give you the originals.